A brand new month and a brand new Tacky Talk with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. Welcome to December, Tacky.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having me back, and happy to the end of 2021.
That's hard to believe, but it's fast approaching. It was good to see you in the Christmas parade, actually, back on Sunday.
Yeah, I was glad I could make the parade. Great crowd, actually. I was very impressed by the crowd that showed up, and I got to see some of my colleagues I haven't seen in a bit, which is actually part of the fun of the parade. You can see some friends and other folks, but also your colleagues in government. So that was a good day, and I'm glad I was able to make a wave towards the QA TV table.
Absolutely, and I know a little later on, we're recording this on December 1st, as I mentioned, a little later on, you're ringing the bell for the Salvation Army with our director here, John Colleary.
Yep, it's 11:05-ish now. I'm at the bell duty at 1 o'clock down at Quincy Center. And again, the Quincy Sun does a great job with Salvation Army on raising more awareness for people in need and providing some funds during this holiday season as times continue to be very tough. I know unemployment is actually pretty decent. It's closing in on the 5% area. However, as we see still out there, the need is high. And actually was at Interfaith Social Services doing some Thanksgiving, pre-Thanksgiving food packages, putting them into cars, and was very surprised at the length of the cars, not necessarily surprised by the need, but the line queued up, just wouldn't stop. Like I said, I've always known there's a need, but it's interesting how, people continue to, try to get there very timely to pick up the pre-Thanksgiving packages.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the cost of things has risen so dramatically so quickly. I think it's impacting a lot of people that it might not normally have an impact on this year.
Yeah, food prices have gone up anywhere from 7 to well into 20%, depending on what you're looking for. And if you're looking for something that's imported, supply chain overseas has made it very challenging. And this includes things like produce, like bananas and avocados, for example, or if you're in the community that eats a lot of rice, rice imports from Asia have all been delayed, largely because of supply chain issues. So, a lot of staple foods for many folks, has gone up in price. And I know people went got into pandemic flour making.
Yes.
Or pandemic bread making. I didn't get into bread making, by the way. But I had this thing. I couldn't quite figure out how to do it. But I've been told it's not hard.
There's only three main ingredients.
No, I have a weird issue regarding dough. It's strange. I can cook a lot of things and then get to dough, and I just mentally have issues. Flour is expensive. I think everyone's seen that. And even local bakeries, whether it be DeAngelo's down in the Cape, in the Neshoba Valley, a couple of local bakeries there, I've noticed their stock hasn't been as full as you normally see it in the stores locally.
Yeah, it's, we should mention too that there are agencies like Interfaith, like the Salvation Army, like Father Bill's and Mainspring that are available to help folks if you are facing a need, either with the utility bill or with food or rent. There is help out there. So I know folks sometimes are proud, and there's a degree of not wanting to ask for help, but it's available.
Yeah, and again, tackychan.org is the website I use. That's mostly information referral. We do keep a page there and phone numbers and websites of local service agencies if you want to try to find one for yourself or perhaps for a friend or relative that you think could use some assistance. That QCAP, as pointed out, has low income fuel assistance programs. If you're out in Germantown, the Germantown Neighborhood Center is still open with the Y. Of course, Quincy Resources is available for translation and other types of language barrier access assistance. So yeah, again, I'll remind folks, tackychan.org does provide some information referral that can perhaps save you a little time as opposed to kind of Googling your way to the internet.
Right. Yes. Well, I'm just thinking folks who may have been on the margins, to begin with the higher costs of food and energy could be in trouble.
Agreed. And also Mass Save. I'd like to remind folks about Mass Save. Yep. They provide right now a low cost energy efficiency light bulbs as well as thermostats. They've been doing a lot of that stuff as well as free home inspection regarding energy needs. Mm-hmm. People had one free home review of energy, as well as they provide some light bulbs for free. It's already picked up by your electric bill, by the way. So it's not really free, but your electric bill already pays for this. So you can get this inspection done, get you some light bulbs and some recommendations on what you can do down the road to save energy costs.
Yeah, it can definitely be a help for sure. So how was Thanksgiving in the Chan household this year, Tacky?
We had the Chan Thanksgiving on Friday. My aunt and uncle, their family came up, and my uncle's goddaughter came over, and there was a good crowd of 10 folks. And it was nice to have everyone over for about, you know, 3 or so hours at a table, and spending a better part of the week cooking everything for everyone. I was fairly exhausted by the time end of Friday came. So, but no, everyone's safe and well. And we did a Zoom call as well later on Saturday to check in with the rest of the family. And it sounds like everybody is doing well as they are. And especially for my mom, I mean, it's she gets to see her siblings much more often via this format that we're in now than she's had in years. One of the interesting silver linings of pandemic is, you know, utilizing technology we never thought ever need to use or occur to us to use. To stay in more communication with others around the world.
Sure. Of course, since last we chatted, now there's Omicron.
Omicron, yeah. I mean, people ask me where the next variants are coming from, and I always say Africa. The continent has less than a 5% vaccination rate. It's a lot of parts that's hard to reach. They don't have modern refrigeration for the mRNA vaccine, which leaves them the more conventionally made vaccines, which is the way to make the flu vaccines, such as Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, and the various Chinese versions, including Sinovac. But even then, if you can, you know, get it there, they can't pay for it because they're not very wealthy countries. Right. And then you still have to try to get it there. It doesn't have a lot of modern infrastructure in certain regions in Africa. Certain regions are much more difficult to get to. Same in South and Central America as well as Central Asia. So, you know, this, again, is a concern about lack of vaccination. Vaccination stymies the spread of the virus, which reduces the possibility of mutations. Actually, I got my booster shot on Saturday as well. I'm still feeling a bit exhausted from it. Mm. So I won't lie to you. I did the mix and match. I got the Pfizer initially and got the Moderna the second time, well, the third time around now. And I'll be fine in a few more days, but it was exhausting. I thought it was more exhausting than I thought it would be.
Interesting.
But we don't know what Omicron's going to do yet.
Right.
Science is still out. It's already in 16 countries detected. And we don't know if it becomes like a beta situation, which we thought would be dominant coming out of South America, but it never did. Delta became the dominant one, and Alpha was still dominating before Delta. So Omicron may not be a big deal, but we still don't know. And thus far, it doesn't seem to kill or make people ill faster. It's really about the spread rate. Does it spread more efficiently? And the jury's still out, or the scientific community is still out trying to figure it out. And given the world scientists are working in this, I think we'll probably know an answer in the next few weeks.
Yeah. You think what do you think about the travel bans that have been enacted because of it?
I understand there's a lot of, I've noticed globally watching the news in different countries that there's a lot of what I call spin doctoring about the travel ban.
Yep.
The logic is that if you have the travel ban, it reduces the number of infections coming in from the country of origin and trying to give you, quote unquote, a chance to get ready to deal with the eventual coming of the virus.
Right.
Given the fact it's already in 16 countries, the problem with the coronavirus is that by the time you realize a new variant is there, it's already left your borders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the travel ban in many ways doesn't make a lot of sense in the sense that if it's super infectious, you just need one person, right? You don't need 10. You just need one, and then it's pretty
wildfire. We go right back to Biogen again, you know.
That is exactly it. We go back to the Biogen. All it takes is one person to screw it up. But if you're a highly vaccinated region like we are in Massachusetts, you know, you don't really need to do travel bans because we have a much safer situation regarding keeping the virus from spreading. But I mean, instituting a quarantine may have been a better way to go about it, or instituting a PRC. A test requirement. The PRC test does pick up Omicron. So I think it's kind of interesting, right? On the one side, the spin is that on the one side, the spin is, well, we want more time to get ready for it to come, but it's already shown up in 16 places. On the flip side, if you have a good vaccination rate, then you really should just look at a quarantine and or a PRC for people coming in for that region. And once you get a handle of what's going on, you reevaluate your travel restrictions. Certain countries haven't had changed anything. For example, Hong Kong has not changed, and neither has China, because the restrictions are very high.
Yeah.
Omicron was actually detected in China in a quarantine situation. They found it in someone in quarantine. So, within a week of Omicron's announcement, 16 countries, as people keep looking for this new variant now, they've noticed it's popping up. Again, we don't know what the spread rate is going to look like. Delta's shocking is the fact that it spreads so much more efficiently than the original or the Alpha variant. So we'll know soon enough, I suspect.
Speaking of testing, you're probably aware the state of New Hampshire tried a program where every resident could get an at-home test delivered to their home for free, and they ran out in a day. So do you think that's something that Massachusetts should look at?
Well, I mean, if you go into the CVS, you may luck upon seeing a take-home test. It can be as high as $60 at one
point. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is not a low cost. I'm a little surprised New Hampshire did. It's not a state well known for generating a whole lot of money on its own. It's a no income tax state. So
right. I'm not sure
how they pay for anything sometimes. But that being said, the problem with the test is very simple. One test doesn't dictate the outcome.
Mm.
You have to time the test correctly. So if you were just exposed to a situation, the virus may not reach a viral load that the test can pick it up. It could take anywhere between 3 to 5 days, as we keep talking about over and over again, the quarantine periods and the time it activates. And, Delta can be much more infectious in a shorter time, within 1 to 3 days, as opposed to 3 to 5. So that's why they always say, you need to take two tests X days apart, generally 2 or 3 days apart, to find a determination if you're infected or not. If you've been traveling and you think you may have been exposed, get a take-home test. Obviously, reach out to community health centers and doctor's offices and hospitals, depending on how you get your health care. But be mindful of the fact that, if you thought you were exposed, you got to give it a few days before you can take the test.
Yeah. The test is just that one moment in time. That's all. It doesn't help with the after the fact.
Agreed. And, one of the countries, Taiwan, was not a country, but, the Taiwan island, has a massive testing program continuously. And until they let up their guard and, Delta got in there.
Mm.
And China, as they said, testing 10 million people at a time in some cities. But again, it's about timing. You got to go back more than once.
Yeah. So, Tacky, as we record this today, the news of the day, as you're well aware, is that Governor Baker has announced he will not seek re-election. Were you surprised?
Not entirely. It's a common question people ask. No one asks if I'm running for re-election. They always ask if the governor's running for re-election. I have operated on a couple of theories. One is that he would stick around because, we're not out of pandemic yet. And it's not always bright to change ships and leadership during times of crisis. For better or for worse, there's at least a consistency of what's going on in terms of how to deal with the current pandemic. But we're far from being an epidemic. We're still in pandemic mode. But we're in a better position than we were since 2 years ago. Secondly, the governor never really got to work on his agenda. Pandemic really has consumed the last couple of years on any kind of policy agenda. And the legislature finally got to focus on stuff this year. But even though it was such a slower second half of a two-year session, neither the legislature or governor could focus on anything else for a good year. So the theory was also that, the governor doesn't have to stay for the whole third term. He could leave anytime he wants. Nobody's holding a gun to you to stay in this job. But on the flip side, he just turned 65.
Mm-hmm.
He's aged a whole lot in the past couple of years. You know, this has been a hard position for anybody in leadership, in government, especially, where your decisions not just make or break an economy, but could result in someone dying based on your decision making. And there's a lot of stress involved here and a lot of balls in the air and moving parts, especially executive branch officials. I mean, I may disagree with the governor, but I don't envy the challenges or decisions he has to make because the buck stops with him. So, you know, I ask you all the same question. You know, do you really want to be dealing with this at age 65, perhaps four more years? So rumor mill was that he and his family have been conversing since the summertime, trying to decide if they want to continue to decide, weighing the pros and cons, not necessarily just a career path for himself, but also what it means to impact his family. And I think some of you may recall the governor's house was actually invaded during the summer by an individual who were protesting vaccines and mask mandates and all this other stuff. And obviously that caused a lot of concern for himself, his wife, and his whole family about the fact that people have reached that a point where they're not, you know, just protesting at your house, but you know, they're actually on your property damaging things. And you don't know if the person's crazy enough to walk into your home and startles your wife in your kitchen.
Right.
You can all imagine, you know, none of us want that happen to any of us. So there's a lot of factors in play here. But, you know, I respect the governor's decision. I fully get it. I like, absolutely get it. And it opens an interesting question in 2022 in politics, because open field shows up again and it could be a whole lot of new dominoes.
Yes. Any tacky insight into potential candidates?
Well, I do not like to speculate on what isn't happened yet. And people always ask me questions, but I don't speculate on anybody that hasn't announced for office.
Yeah.
So those who aren't aware, Sonia Chandia is a state senator from JP, and former Senator Ben Downing from Berkshires, and Danielle Allen, who's a Harvard professor, have all announced governor during last summertime. So you got three Democratic primary candidates currently. You have Adam Hines, and I think his name's Bartro, as announced for lieutenant governor. And then you got a couple of the folks, Quentin Palfrey, and I'm trying to remember the woman's name. She ran for U.S. Senate in a primary. She was going to run the U.S. Senate primary against Kennedy. She's a labor attorney. I can't think of her name right now, but she's already announced that she's running for attorney general if Maura Healey gets out, as well as candidates for state auditor Chris Dempsey and Senator Diane DeSoglio. So, you know, there's some Democratic primary candidates out there. The question, of course, is the one you're asking right now is, where's Maura Healey? And the good attorney general has been vague about her political career all year long, despite making statements that she would have more determinative answers coming up. The polling shows that, you know, obviously she's the favorite Democratic primary. There's no clear indication what she's going to do in the sense that, other than being super vague. Mm. I mean, super vague is not a clear answer, folks. But I mean, I would presume, you know, you got like $2.5 million in your war chest, and you got state recognition, you got a statewide machine, and the state committee loves you. You would think that, you know, it would be logical to make the jump. But then again, that's not my decision. It's her political career for her to make that choice. So we'll continue to wait it out to see what happens. Nomination papers are coming out in February. So,
pretty still close. Plenty,
very close. We still have plenty of time left. You know, on the Republican side, the only known candidate for the Republican primaries, former Representative Jeff Deal.
Yep.
He ran for U.S. Senate against Elizabeth Warren, got trounced badly in that race. So, you know, we'll see where that takes us next. Perhaps there'll be more Republican candidates, especially if Karen Pulido also announced that she's not running for a re-election or any election.
Yeah.
Does open up the possibility that there could be a large Republican primary field.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, Governor Baker has always described himself as kind of a moderate centrist Republican, if you will. So it'll be interesting to see if there's an appetite for a candidate like that going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we always look at past elections to give us an indication of the future may hold.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, but it doesn't always work that way, right?
True.
I mean, you know, I rely heavily looking at past data to try to project future outcomes. And I've been doing this long enough. You know, I'm pretty good at running more than one scenario, but there's no guarantee until all the candidates are in and you see how they perform campaigning in real life.
Yep.
And then I start to adjust my assessment based on my observations. So still, any, you know, 2022 could be very exciting. Anything could happen.
And, certainly.
You know, and we haven't even gotten to like county seats and other local electeds at the state house that may not be running for re-election next year.
It would be interesting to see if you know, the move toward the progressive candidates continues. We saw it certainly in the congressional races. We saw it in the mayor's race in Boston even. So it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, Boston and greater Boston is going to be most fascinating regarding the push towards the left side of the party.
Yeah.
As they'll be running more people against incumbents. From there in the Democratic primaries. But Boston is clearly a strong Democratic city. Republicans have a very low odds of winning in Boston. The battle will be about whether you keep the centrist moderate Democrats in play in Boston and some of the greater Boston area. That's what, but on the flip side, you know, even in the strong liberal areas like Somerville and Cambridge, you know, they've run liberal candidate against liberal candidate as well. Again, not a Republican area. So, you know, we watched for that stuff very carefully on you know, the whole field. So as we get closer to the nomination period, paper time, you know, obviously I'll get much more excited as I kind of start to break apart the various candidates and races that will appear.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I know you've said previously, but just again, seeing as we're talking about it, you are seeking re-election for your seat.
Yeah, I'm back again. I want to be back again, folks. So. That's my full intention to get my papers in February and try to get my 150 Democratic unenrolled signatures as quickly as possible and get rolling, preparing for a race next year, or maybe not. I have no idea what's going to happen locally yet. I'm very quiet on the Quincy front, as I like to put it. I do keep my ears out, but it's right now very quiet in the Quincy front. And, you know, and then I don't have to, but I mean, you know, I should consider whether I'm going to back a Democratic candidate in the Democratic primaries.
Is there a chance you might not, are you saying?
There's always a chance I may not, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I will be very curious to see when that decision is made for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to endorse anyone. I mean, I always can take a pass in a primary. So, but I suspect as we, like I said, when the year turns, as it heats up more, there'll probably be some more conversation among various candidates with seeking endorsements from various folks. And, you know, I do consult the other members of the delegation on their thoughts in the matter. And, you know, the delegation may be split on their endorsements, the delegation may be together endorsements.
But, yeah.
You know, I do actually do talk to my colleagues about this stuff as part of my decision-making process.
Well, speaking of the nuts and bolts of legislation, let's talk a bit about the American Rescue Plan progress that has been made.
Yeah, it was announced yesterday that the House Chair and Senate Chair of Ways and Means has completed a conference committee on this federal money plus the remaining surplus from FY21, which amounts to about $4 billion in total combined. And it's not all the federal money. We still have some more federal money left in the trust for capital infrastructure projects, so roads and bridges, essentially. The rules of the House, we talked about this a little last time, is they can't carry appropriation bills into the new session year for 2022. So we could actually try to get this done in informal session this week and send it to the governor. And the informal session means any single person can stop a bill by objecting. Right now, we don't know what's going to happen. Unlikely the Democratic caucus will raise an objection. Perhaps a member of the Republican caucus will. But again, who knows? Life is unpredictable. Mm-hmm. We'll probably know on Thursday, get some indications during Thursday informal session about its ability to move. If there is a problem moving informal session, the speaker still is functioning under emergency powers and the normal calendar under the rules does not apply. So the speaker can call us back into emergency session, or not emergency session, a regular session under emergency powers to vote this through if someone does object in an informal session.
Okay. So there's still a chance then it could get done before the end of the year, yes?
Absolutely. It can get done before Christmas time. But like I said, we'll have a sense Thursday, I think, from the caucuses as they kind of weigh in the speaker's office as well as the minority leader's office about whether anybody is going to object to the movement of this bill.
Okay.
But, you know, just plenty of time on the clock. As you can tell, I'm not wicked concerned.
No, it doesn't seem like the speaker is either. He seems pretty confident that it will happen. It's just a matter of when.
Agreed. And there's a number of capital projects that were included in the bill, which I have not seen the bill yet. I'm working on likelihood that all our Quincy capital projects made it through the conference committee version. Obviously, I can't say definitively till I actually see the bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got some money for Scoring Point Park Ferry for some dredging in Quincy Bay, some money for the Church of the President's fire extinguisher system because of the tombs. I need to help preserve those as well as the building itself. Some money for the Thomas Crane Library roof. So, there's some capital projects in there for the city that amounts to close to almost $1.6 million, $1.7 million.
Okay. So that's kind of comparable to what the city normally gets in Chapter 90 funding, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually, I forgot. There's actually two more. There's a $200,000 for CAP, QCAP, to do CAP improvements at the food pantry, and $200,000 to get Quincy Age Resources food pantry program. They're building a mobile food pantry. So those, again, are one-time costs. They get people their capital projects done.
Yeah. Okay, hopefully those stay. And I know we had talked a little bit about, last time you and I talked a little bit about how the money is spent. It doesn't have to be all spent at once, is that right?
Yeah, the capital project money will probably disperse pretty quickly. But in terms of the remaining funds, it's generally a four-year disbursement, 3 to 5. I use 4 because it's in between 3 and 5. But it's 3 to 5 year disbursement. On a various program. So this money is a multi-year program pursuant to federal government requirement. And given the impact of COVID-19, we're going to continue to see its impact for some time to come. Mm. I've done a couple of field trips, public hearings regarding the hospitality industry, especially of restaurants in two parts of the state, ready in Ludlow and Plymouth. It's very clear from those meetings that the economic impact on a number of different levels, ranging from education to workforce to healthcare, the impact is still going to be felt for some years to come. And this money is to help address those impacts.
Yeah. There was, I know, $500 million included for the unemployment trust fund. Did that remain? Do you know?
I don't know, but the rumor is that it's a $4 billion package. So I'm going to say the answer is yes.
Okay.
There was agreement in House and Senate going into the debate on each side. So I'm going to tell you yes. And that will alleviate us having to borrow money to fill the unemployment trust fund. And, like I said, it's kind of a weird situation where unemployment is dropping, but there's a labor workforce shortage. It's a very interesting economic.
Yeah. I wonder how many people are just dropping off the unemployment rolls, and not showing up in the percentage.
There's always that case, right? I mean, for example, people who are homeless do not show up on unemployment rolls if they're living in a shelter. People who release from incarceration, not getting unemployment. Mm-hmm. People who have used up their entire allotment are not getting it. So it doesn't show up in unemployment numbers. But there's also a large number of people retiring. It'll be more people retiring in the near term that is going to not contribute to the help on unemployment. And the people engaging career changes going on all through pandemic.
Yep.
I mean, I remind folks, you're not going to sit around wait for your job to come back during pandemic, if there's an opportunity to do something else.
Yeah, the bills don't stop coming in.
That's correct. I mean, people are able to find jobs to pay more to unemployment, and they took it.
Yep.
And I mean, I think people have this very kind of cynical view that everybody in employment just sat at home and just sat there and just collected money. Yeah, some did. But other folks I talked to weren't going to wait to their job come back because they don't know if there was going to be a job there to begin with. So why wait?
Most of them were forced onto unemployment unwillingly. They were working full time and wanted to continue to do so. It was not of their choice.
If you're in Boston, we have a 20% death rate in restaurants. Would you be sitting around waiting to find out if your restaurant's going to reopen?
It's an easy no.
Exactly. So there, but there's a high demand for drivers right now, and Amazon and Uber and Lyft and other FedEx, UPS, other delivery services, and not a surprise. I mean, people are actually filling those jobs right now.
Yep. So there is opportunity out there for sure. Look for the silver linings in all of this, because there are some out there for sure. I'd be curious to see if there's new entrepreneurs that show up with new businesses, things they've been putting on the back burner for years and years and years, and now have the opportunity to give it a shot.
Well, one of the businesses I'm actually kind of watching more out of a curiosity and anything else is ghost kitchens.
Ghost kitchens.
Yeah, so what it is a ghost kitchen is basically a restaurant with no seating, and it's purely delivery service only.
Oh.
So you'll be a restaurant and you only take delivery orders, and then you either use a third-party service or your own service to deliver food. And this is something I'm trying to see if it actually develops in this state. It has happened in states like California. The idea is that if you're in a suburban community, you become more all remote working. You need to get a meal, and you call a business is already established, largely food trucks, for example, and they are strictly takeout.
Okay. Well, it certainly cuts down on overhead costs of maintaining a brick and mortar facility.
Yeah, and you use the same point of sale system they all use to get accurate deliveries and moving out, and you still have the same standards and health standards as any kitchen. So I'm kind of curious if down the road if these make more appearances if people are still hesitant going back to Boston or big Boston, particularly white collar businesses, will not return to Boston in large numbers and people can work at home. And as we've all experienced, not everybody has a chance to get cooking done. The days of grabbing a sandwich have moved from leaving the office to picking up a phone or using the internet while you're on a Zoom call to put your sandwich order in and have it delivered. I'm curious, is that going to happen to suburban communities? The jury's still out in that, obviously, but it's worth watching.
Okay, it's a little business acumen from Tacky today.
Yeah, a lot of tacky speculation, I think is the
That's why we love these podcasts, Jackie, because we get to get some insight into what you're thinking behind the scenes.
I do learn a thing or two when I actually get to leave the house and talk to some other folks. Like I said, GoPuff has been approved on School Street. It really changed the dynamics regarding convenience stores, and it does have an alcohol license for delivery, which also changed the dynamics in those package stores as well. So you can get a convenience store level services delivered to your home. And they'll be the license was approved, so it's a matter of time as they finish their refurbishment of their property to go into foodborne delivery service. So there's an example of a part of a economy that was already changing, but COVID accelerates it.
Oh yeah. We've seen just an explosion of these, prepackaged food meal boxes that you can have delivered to your house through a subscription service. There seems to be just a multitude of them.
Agreed. And again, people need to work, need to find work, and that's an area that people need jobs filled in, like fulfillment houses and the drivers. And if you're concerned about front-facing work in terms of being exposed to people too much, places like fulfillment houses have a lot of space, and obviously driving keeps you distance from other people. So for those folks who feel unsafe in front-facing work, reduce your contact with folks. This is a good way to do it.
So what'll be coming up in your committee in the next session?
Well, we're right now organizing a hearing. I'm actually having a staff meeting right after you to discuss a hearing in 2 weeks regarding a so-called body works bill. Trying to It's a bill trying to put anything that is a massage therapy into the massage therapy board. It involves touching people. That is the simplest way I can put this. So this is everything from yoga to Reiki to Qigong, trying to cram all these, hundreds of non nothing in common types of modalities into a single board that has no ability to actually address hundreds of different types of modalities.
Okay. Is there not? Doesn't that already exist?
We have a massage therapy board, but not for these other type of
Oh,
modalities.
okay. All right.
And the Attorney General is pushing this bill because, they believe for some reason that all these modalities encourage sex and human trafficking. which is kind of like, quite frankly, trying to hit a fly of a Buick.
It does seem to be a little overreaching, yeah.
Well, it's kind of my conversation with their staff, and it's falling on deaf ears.
Okay.
Also, especially after the spa shooting in Atlanta, given a lot of these modalities are in Asian communities, pointing a broad brush like this doesn't sit well with me, obviously.
Okay. Something to watch for. Stay tuned for that, for sure.
Well, again, tone-deaf people I'm dealing with.
Another reason why I love these podcasts, Tacky. You don't hold back.
No, I mean, I don't have to tell you if you don't ask me a question.
That's what I get to ask. That's my job. What did you accomplish in the past session?
Well, mostly it's honestly around the budget. And we've got a lot of our earmarks in for local projects. We're just moving things out of committee, my level. So for example, you know, moved out bills to the next stage on things such as licensing of debt collectors for passive debt collectors. If Joe buys debt from Tacky, Joe doesn't have to use a licensed debt collector. Joe can hire Mark to collect the debt from him, and he's not licensed. So we're trying to close things like that loophole. We're trying to address a direct shipping of wine to ensure that you're buying wine from a manufacturer, not from a third party. So we're trying to figure out the nuances on that. We do some small corrections like the Board of Veterinarians. The Veterinary Association needed some conformity regarding licensing. Genetic counselors need an education update from a decade ago. They have new education requirements at the national level. So we try to bring their board to follow the national educational standards. Not exciting stuff, folks, but very essential for these very targeted businesses. Continuing education for realtors, especially regarding anti-discrimination laws, something that board of realtors and the association is looking for to require a broader education, continuing education. Obviously, still working on liquor licenses regarding various communities that have reached a quota and looking for exemptions. We do a large level of scrutiny regarding those bills before we release them for committee. And some of this other stuff, all the committee stuff, though, my bills are still sitting in committees. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of waiting here to see what happens. Like, I still have on my data disaggregation bill trying to get that out of state administration. So I had a very good talk with Chairman Cabral and Chairman Pacheco, Senator Pacheco and Representative Cabral about the importance of it, and they understand the public policy issues behind it. You know, I have a bill on debit card paychecks. So, right now you have, when you get your paycheck, you have a choice. You can get it in a paycheck form or direct deposit. By law, you can't pass the cost to the consumer for either one. I'm sorry, pass the cost to the employer for either one. And, as a result, new forms of payment that aren't direct deposit or checks, costs can be passed along to the employee. And one of them is these debit style type cards, and we're working on it for a long time. And with pandemic and people not want to touch stuff, underbanked persons would find themselves perhaps down the road using this type of paycheck because it can't be direct deposit.
Right. Yeah. It's basically like a preloaded card, right? That you can get your money from.
Exactly. It should be treated the same as getting a check or direct deposit. Employees should not have to pay to get their money. So, as I said, not an exciting bill.
Yeah.
I have a bill regarding OSHA education requirements. That one's a little trickier than I thought it would be, to require minimum 10 hours of OSHA training for a certain size of projects, generally like over $100,000 is what we're thinking. But that bill started as a very simple concept, and the deeper it went, the harder it got. Trying to figure out the size of projects and the different impacts in OSHA training. And we wanted to have people get more information easily about OSHA violations. It turns out trying to get off the OSHA website is very difficult, doing it ourselves, as well as other entities trying to collect information on your behalf is actually pretty difficult. So it's a federal thing, OSHA, and we're trying to address a state issue regarding having contractors use OSHA. And it's a lot harder than I initially thought. Simple ideas get complicated once you try to figure out its actual
implementation. Well, I mean, Marty Walsh is labor secretary. Maybe he can help you out.
I should give Marty a call. Hey. I need a more streamlined OSHA process so we actually find out the violators more easily.
Yeah, what a concept, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have all the powers of the internet, but we can't seem to use it properly, which I find also pretty amusing. And we can't use such a great informational gathering device, and people can't seem to get information on there in a user easy format. It just boggles my mind sometimes. People who I do not know why to, like, you use the thing, you should know you can actually use it before you put it out in the public.
Well, it's what happens when you let very technical people design. You should let designers design.
I agree with that, which also brings to interior design bill. We actually released a bill regarding licensing interior designers. So a couple of things were still in the hopper that, you know, as part of staff conversation, we're trying to figure out. One is, how do we address situations where a doggy daycare-ish service, you know, doggy daycare service has an incident? You know, how do we address those situations if a dog or a person is injured on site, and how do we get proper enforcement regarding those circumstances? Yeah. You know, we have a bill on in gyms and health clubs. People remember Boston Sports Club was still collecting your dues during pandemic.
Yeah.
So we decided to tackle this issue to try to make it more apparent and clear and uniform the statute regarding consumer rights associated with gyms. So you know your cancellation policy, you know what the trial period looks like, you have more awareness of what's going on in your fee structures and you know, that kind of stuff. So we're looking closely. Veterinary technicians, I didn't realize that you and I could be a veterinary technician giving anesthesia of a dog with actually no training.
Oh my. So,
yeah. So, you know, we're looking to do something with that bill as well. We released it for committee. It was actually a pretty easy technical bill in terms of the writing. You know, I got a new Department of Professional Licensure, which is now called a Department of Occupational Licensing, which I'm still thinking of DPL, not DOL. But nevertheless, you know, they have an enforcement bill that I got to really put some more eyes on. They want to expand some of the enforcement powers, up their enforcement powers on license violations and people practicing without a license. So, you know, we got that stuff going on. So, yeah, I'm still getting a lot of emails and other folks advocating for a bunch of bills in committee. We're still trying to sort our way out, which makes sense. My own personal stuff, as I said earlier, is still also trapped in committee. You can't move something till it comes out.
Right. You mentioned liquor licenses. Is there not some kind of a proposal to lift the limit on the number of liquor licenses a single license holder can have?
Yeah, the Massachusetts Package Stores Association got sufficient certified signatures to get through phase one of the ballot question to double the number of beer and wine licenses available. A two-way single business entity. Currently, a single business entity cannot have more than 9 total beer and wine licenses, and you can't have more than 3, is it 3 or 5? I'm trying to remember what numbers, but all alcohol. But it's really a beer and wine was people looking for. Okay. So the package stores did a preemptive against Cumberland Farms question from 2 years ago to give unlimited licenses and try to get down to the ballot. We'll have more clear understanding of the other ballot question initiatives as we head deeper into December as the Secretary of State confirmed certification of numbers.
Okay, good. You know, I'm thinking in the governor, I don't know if you read the governor's letter this morning about his decision not to run for re-election, but one of the things he cited as an accomplishment was the police reform bill. Is that a done deal now? Is that enacted?
The police reform bill?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It, you know, the various special commissions created by the reform bill is having public meetings and public hearings. Commission, basically, there's already exist police training. There is essentially a police training department. I mean, I can't remember the name of it, but we always had one. So they basically reformed that whole department. Okay. So that stuff's been ongoing. It was baked into this past year's budget. And as things continue on this progress, expect this upcoming budget, if there's more funding needed, you know, it will be provided.
Yeah, I haven't. The big concern about it was the fact that police officers were concerned they could be sued. I haven't heard of any issues yet.
Well, this qualified immunity issue. All right, I'm going to try to explain this in 3 minutes.
Yeah,
qualified immunity is a government thing. So if you're trying to sue the government, you have to get past qualified immunity. And so let's not use police officer. Let's say you're a janitor and you created situation on a public building that results in someone's and many more people slip and fall that, you know, there. And the question becomes, you know, was the janitor actually acting on his own accord or working for the government? The answer is working for the government because he's the one cleaning the floors, left it in a situation that became a hazard. The question next becomes, since it's not the employee independently doing it, can you sue the city of Quincy, for example, directly for those slip and falls on government property associated to an employee that did something wrong?
Right.
And to demonstrate that, you have to get through a lot of barriers. In the case of a situation associated with a civil rights violation, you have to demonstrate that the government, through its employee, was acting in a willful, I had these words memorized last summer, but basically it's a willful and malice behavior against the individual. You can't demonstrate the government was initiating through the agent, the employee, willful malice behavior. You have no civil rights violation that stops there. But if you should demonstrate that, you break qualified immunity, get through the wall of qualified immunity, and you can sue the city government directly.
Okay, all right.
Concerns of police officers regarding qualified immunity is whether they themselves can be held liable. The answer is no if you're doing it in the form of your employment.
Okay.
Because qualified immunity holds there. The statute changes it to a standard of, what's the legal term? It's the highest civil level term. People keep looking at this as a criminal issue, like, you know, beyond reasonable doubt. Qualified immunity is not a criminal issue. It's a civil issue. There is no such thing as beyond a reasonable doubt on civil cases because you're suing for money, not putting people in jail for slip and falls.
Okay.
So the question really becomes on, I can't remember my legal terms, but the highest level of civil review, is part of the standard associated with qualified immunity now, and whether or not, if you acted independently of the government, could you be sued individually, but you must break the highest standard for the term. I can't remember that's in the statute on the civil violation.
Okay. Reasonable doubt, is that what you're trying to think of?
No, reasonable doubt's criminal.
Okay.
It's not a criminal issue.
Okay.
But if a cop does or janitor does a criminal act, then that's not part of your job.
Right.
But somehow you got a corrupt boss
right.
in government telling you to do something illegal. Qualified immunity doesn't apply at all. Qualified immunity completely shields the government.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person's out on their own regarding the criminal complaint.
Yeah, which was the case before this new law, right?
It's always been the case.
Yeah.
If you commit a crime, you are held criminally liable and you could be potentially civilly liable because you committed something outside the course of your duty. You cannot, the government is now completely shielded from that employee because it was outside the scope of work.
Yeah. Then you become, you know, regular citizen Joe, not police officer Joe. So,
yeah. That's correct.
Okay.
So if you, commit an act of crime on your own, let's say you murder somebody, you go to jail, but you're also open to a civil case by the survivors of the murdered individual as a civil suit individually.
Mm-hmm.
There's no qualified immunity because you can't sue the government. You can sue the individual. The government is shielded from that lawsuit.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for explaining that, Jackie. Because, you know, when the governor mentioned that in his letter, I said, gee, I thought that was a law already. So it is law. And it just not has the controversy that was surrounding it when it was first proposed hasn't surfaced, at least not yet.
Again, the mistake that people make, they're using a criminal standard in a civil case. It is not a criminal matter. Beyond reasonable doubt does not exist in civil law.
Okay.
Qualified immunity is a civil case. So this is kind of the challenge you're trying to explain because people watch Law and Order and figure they know everything.
that's true.
you don't see many civil case in TV drama. It's too difficult to explain civil. It's not exciting.
Exactly. It's not. It's boring. So it doesn't make good TV. Yeah.
No, people like to watch awful things to happen to people, and the police drag them in and put them in court. That's exciting. So no one knows civil law really well in the layman's term because they all watch TV, and it's all criminal because it's more exciting.
Yeah. Before we let you go, what's coming up in your district you want to let folks know about?
Well, we have some tree lightings coming up this weekend. Autumn Shore is having its sleigh ride, a tree lighting this evening, 4 to 6. You have the HouseNet tree lighting, I believe, at 6 p.m. on I think it's 5 or 6. I'm trying to remember. I can't look at my calendar right now, but it's coming up this Sunday. Yep. With sadness, we have a good friend, Joel Brew, who passed away.
Yeah.
Also being waked this Saturday at the Sweeney Homes on Elm Street. Sweeney's at Elm Street.
Dennis Sweeney's place there. Yep.
And in Chinatown, Uncle Bill Chin passed away as well. He's very much a stalwart of Chinatown and on the community level, including being one of the founders of South Cove Community, South Cove Manor, not the health center, South Cove Manor. He was one of the founders of that organization, among many others. He passed away as well. So there's some joyous stuff coming up with Christmas sillies, unfortunately some sadness that comes into holidays as well.
Yeah, and you're aware, of course, the General's Bridge and Park tree lighting Sunday, 5 p.m. for active military personnel.
Yep. Yeah, and we're going to have more of those in the city, you know, tries to do, I don't have a date for it because I can't think of it, but I mean, they try to do some kind of winter event down at the Adam Hancock Plaza. I know they did it during President's Day weekend in February, but I'm not sure if there's any other events. I'm sure there's other local tree lightings. You know, I think there's one in West Quincy coming up. There's surely one on Walston Hill. I don't remember the days and times of all these. They kind of move around a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of the civic groups use social media, so that's a good place to find out. I know Four River Rotary, there'll be one. I think it's on Saturday as well. So the War II Civic Association. So places like that, good idea to check their social media.
Yeah, if you want to bring your kids to see a tree lighting, you know, they're all outdoor activities. So, you know, people are a little nervous about being indoors as the coronavirus infection rate numbers continue to rise. I mean, these are outdoor activities, and you know, we can take the family out to watch a tree lighting and celebrate the holidays. So, you know, the city has no shortage of tree lightings.
This is very true. It's going to be lit up for the holidays.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's where we let you tell folks how to talk to you.
Now you can find me at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Hit a button, get a voicemail of somebody, and we'll get the message. You can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. You know, I do check my emails far too regularly in my mind as we kind of sort and get the information to the right part of the staff. I do sit on this thing and look at it too much. You know, my state representative, Tacky Chan, Facebook page, again, we put some stuff up. You can watch my past public hearings and see how more or less funny I am here. You can look at that stuff. And of course, I mentioned earlier, our information referral resource page at tackychan.org. You know, there's various tabs, and click them when to find some phone numbers that may be helpful to you.
We're going to have a show with the many hats of Tacky. People might not be aware that you're a big hat aficionado. So do you have like a closet full of them somewhere, Tacky?
I have a small number. I mean, I have, you saw the nice fedora I got on the Christmas parade, the brown one. I have a couple of black ones. I have a old leather cowboy hat, which I've not worn as much as I have in the past. But actually, it's a pretty good rain hat. But you don't wear it in the winter. The leather is not very comfy in the winter. So, people see me out and about, I do prefer my fedoras.
Yes, that's what brought it up, because I noticed that in the parade and I said, oh, that looks like a new one. I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, if it gets really cold, you know, I'll wear my blue scout cap type of a winter hat. Particularly if I'm going to like the market, you know, just kind of stick it on and get in there and get out, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, and also it was mentioned my old ratty jacket, which I'll be wearing again this winter. It was comment I needed a jacket. I'm like, why? It still works. It doesn't look great on the outside, but it's keeping me warm. So
it's supposed to do,
I do get picked on about my age and clothes every so often, but if it's too presentable or it really doesn't matter in terms of like a photograph or something, and you know, I'll just keep wearing it. It's also comfortable, and you know, I like to wear comfortable clothes. I'm no different from anybody else.
Sure. Yeah. Well, of course, when you get back into formal session in the State House, things will be a little different.
Yeah, I still fit in my suits, folks. So COVID-19 on the weight side did not affect me. I think some people would be jealous hearing that. But you know, there is a strange normality as I get into my suits. And also, if you guys have clothes that need to be tailored, please do consider using a local tailor. Mm. I've been very badly impacted by pandemic because of the lack of proms and weddings for a very long period of time. And of course, dry clean. So, you know, if you all got clothes, you know, before you decide to buy some new stuff, you know, please look at trying to use a local tailor. They definitely can use the help.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I hadn't thought of that, but there's so many, I'm sure, little cottage businesses like that that are struggling that we don't even think about.
Mm, absolutely, as we move to holidays, and you know, if you're looking to buy gifts, but also you know get some local services if you can afford it, you know, definitely please consider doing that. Maybe try a place you never tried before.
All right. Thanks, Tacky. Good to talk to you as always.
Good to talk to you. See you in a week.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.